Toodle-loo-ma-loo-ma-toodle-loo-ma-loo-ma-toodle-i-ay. Any umbrellas to mend today. Bring your parasol, it may be small, it may be big.
We have a kind of a bit of a special episode today because it's the two of the oldest of the old farts. I mean, character-wise, I'm not making any other...
Yes. Yeah, good say there.
Character-wise, this is a two-hander, as it were.
We tick both boxes, I think.
Yeah, well, all three of us. This is a two-hander this week between Emery and Milton because, it's just Scott and Spencer today. So I guess the first thing to do is to try and remember exactly what happened in the last episode. And, well, I do know one thing is that Rita, Barney's character, did end up in hospital. Had a very nasty run-in, well, with something slimy and toad-like and slithery that just hopped up out the Thames and, well, came very close to killing her, in fact. But somehow, miraculously, I think the dice liked Barney that day. Rita survived, but not without taking some horrible wounds to her abdomen, which is now, she's now healing up in
the London Hospital in Whitechapel.
The London Hospital in Whitechapel, of course. Fantastic. However, more intriguingly, what one might say, Milton and Emery decided to try some improvisational magic, which is always the best kind, I find. Actually, was it spontaneous Cthulhu Mythos, or did you actually cast...
No, it wasn't, was it? We were going to go for spontaneous Cthulhu Mythos, but then we decided just to try a recipe from the book, and we just sort of stumbled through it all rather drunkenly. And that's right, I failed my first roll for casting it. And then, yeah, I think I just relied on the fact that I was pissed out of my head for the pushed roll, and somehow it worked. The secret, as ever, was just more gin.
More gin. Always more gin. But what happened is you opened up a tear in reality, a door of some kind opened up. You were trying to, I suppose, reopen or find the door that the incorrigible Mr. Dives, I think he has a number of sobriquets, but he's the uncongenial Mr. Dives, I think is what he's officially called in the book. The uncongenial Mr. Dives had opened up and somehow eluded Milton once before. And this time, the door opened up and you saw inside that it was a rather elegant drawing room with two people sitting in it, one of whom clearly was Mr. Dives, the other was a woman that he seemed to be having a rather pleasant afternoon tea, or I can't remember if it was evening or maybe they were eating dinner, weren't they? Of course, they were having dinner.
Dinner, yeah, we were just in time for dinner.
You're just in time for dinner, yes, of course. And you both stepped through, which might have been a foolhardy move, but the good news was when you got through, you seemed to be incorporeal, and which was good and bad because you could obviously observe without being seen, but you couldn't really interact very much with what was going on. Much though you tried, I think the best you managed to achieve was giving Mr. Dives a spot of indigestion by putting your incorporeal hand right down into his gullet.
Yes.
I was going to say, I believe I was desperately trying to taste some of this delicious-looking steak by sitting in the lap of
the lady.
The lady, yes.
Yes, yeah, you did. And you did get perhaps just a, I don't know, the hint, a ghost of a taste, perhaps, as it passed down into her digestive tract. But somehow, well, for a couple of things. First, it turns out she's a German lady, a certain Birgit von Kant. Von Kant. Who seems like she's a bit steely, let's say. She seemed to be very keen on getting her hands on the book as well, the black letter book that everyone has been so desperately searching for. And she seemed to be one that wouldn't pussyfoot around, very much someone that would take direct action. And Dives was trying to placate her, perhaps, and negotiate a more business-like approach, whereas Birgit was saying that she would get hold of it using whatever means were at her disposal, which seemed to be some kind of threat. So, yeah, maybe not someone to really mess with. I didn't really describe her either. She was about 30, actually. Not as old as you might imagine for someone with so much self-confidence. And tall. I mean, you could tell even from sitting down that she was a tall lady, long-limbed. And she was wearing a man's suit tailored in a distinctly feminine cut. And, very striking, with pale green eyes. Blonde, typically, yes, being German. Yes, a very striking lady. And the final thing was, as you sort of sat on her and in her lap, Milton, there seemed to be some sort of stirring of something, some sort of connection between her and your cosmic passenger that has been with you all these years. Somehow your connection to Igonalak seemed to stir something in her, and she referred to her master, perhaps her fleshy master.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think we should start the whole session off with a little tickly sanity roll for all of this stuff that has just happened to you. So, well, first thing, let's make a luck roll. Let's make a luck refresh, and then we can do a sanity roll.
No, I passed that one.
You passed that luck roll. Poor Emery. Never. Always the bridesmaid, never the bride. And Milton as well. I mean, you start off with two very nice rolls. Unfortunately, you wanted to fail both of them. Now, of course, you will fail both your sanity rolls, I would imagine. But yes. Let's have a look.
Well, let's see, shall we?
Yes.
Of course, Dr. Emery. Of course, Milton. Well, it's only a tickle, as I said. It's only a point of sanity each for this experience. Because you've seen other dimensions.
Oh, yes.
This is sort of child's play, really. But yeah, perhaps you can have some kind of involuntary incorporeal reaction to the weirdness that is going on in front of you.
I think a bit of ectoplasm leaks out.
We won't say where from. Yes, a little jet of ectoplasm. And as it comes out, Dives looks around and says, "Did you hear that?" And Bridget just shakes her head. But yes, I guess given that you don't have a lot of ways to interact, you can't really communicate with them or interact with them. Is there anything else you want to do whilst you're in this observing place?
I'm extremely frustrated that I'm not experiencing this stake as much as I'd hoped. I'm struggling with this non-corporeal business all round, to be honest.
Yeah, do you suppose that this change in her physical circumstances is indefinite? Do we need to perform some kind of counter ritual to restore ourselves to our former fleshy state? Or is this just going to wear off? I'm finding myself quite at sea here.
Well, that's certainly not reassuring to hear that. I'm already struggling with this. The idea of not being able to enjoy dinner anymore is, I'm struggling to contemplate.
An idea does occur to me. I have no idea if it's a good one, but when has that ever stopped us? We could take advantage of our invisible incorporeal status and just wait here until our unwitting hosts have retired to bed or gone home or whatever it is they're going to do, and then see whether we can perform this counter-ritual. And if we can manifest ourselves corporally here, this is quite a handsome library, and I think we were hoping to procure some of these volumes.
Indeed. You know, we can hang around here, eavesdrop, and find out as much as we can, and then if we can physically then manifest here, I don't know, maybe there'll be some leftovers too.
Ghost burglars, that's going to be your new line of business.
Absolutely.
I was going to say, the one thing you do both strongly sense is that, and you realise it as well, just from, I guess, the almost like a magnetic pull, is that the portal that you came through is still open and is still sort of accessible. And you can even see back through it into the street near Mitre Square. So that is still there. It seems like you could theoretically just go back through it.
We could. But on the other hand, we are in rather an interesting location at the moment. But Milton, dear chap, I am somewhat concerned by this woman's reference to her master. What does this suggest to you?
Well, it's surprising to hear that she's referring to who I think she's referring to, that I wonder if I should consult my medallion. Do I sense that doing anything at all? Is that responding to our interaction?
What an interesting question. Because, of course, you are incorporeal right now. I'll tell you what, why don't you just make a power roll?
Ooh.
Well, that is a success. So perhaps you didn't notice it before, given how many new sensations you were experiencing and how many strange and curious visions you were seeing and hearing.
Well, I was rather concentrating on the state too.
Exactly. But when you look down and you look through your transparent hands, you actually see that the amulet seems to be not transparent. It's actually seems to be intact and whole, solid, but still hanging around your neck.
Is it also hanging around her neck? Is she wearing something similar, perhaps?
No, but it seems to, from where you're, of course, you're still sitting in and on her. And maybe this is what is driving it. Maybe this is it, because it is resting on both of your breastbones at the same time. It's resting on yours, but it seems to also be resting on hers.
So is she aware of its presence suddenly?
Well, she doesn't seem to. It's not like she's reaching for it or anything like that. She doesn't seem to be aware that it's there. At least not that you can discern. However, she did, of course, refer to someone rather familiar to you.
Yes. Well, I mean, we've both encountered that particular individual, haven't we? Certainly, I would say that Emery's probably interacted more with the individual than, you know, myself, although I've got this particular connection through the amulet.
Yeah, I guess the question would be how much of your personal connection you had ever made apparent to the rest of the group. It seems to me that you'd never really expressed it very much, or I don't know.
On the other hand, I think given what we saw in Surrey with the physical transformation of our captor and the subsequent transformation of Milton, I don't think it's too unrealistic to assume that we've put two and two together and are just being too English to actually talk about it.
That seems like a very good explanation, I think. I'll buy that.
I would imagine that Emery would probably... I'm just trying to think of the entity's name.
Igonalak.
Igonalak, that's it, Igonalak. Emery's probably more informed than I am, perhaps, upon the nature of this individual. Is he not?
I could make a Cthulhu Mythos roll if Andy's game here, just to see how much I do know.
I'm always going for that. What I would say, though, is perhaps intellectually, Emery might know more about it, but viscerally, you clearly are more aware of this entity's desires, needs, etc. So I guess between the two of you, you cover most of the bases. But yeah, I mean, if you want to make a Cthulhu Mythos roll to try and kind of intuit something... Well, I mean, it's only 5 points.
Yeah, I am going to spend 5 points of luck to succeed there.
Okay, and it comes to you perhaps in a flash, in a blinding moment of... It's like the pieces, Emery, are finally falling into place after all these years. You didn't kill Igonalak in that cellar of the pub in Surrey. It is not something that can be killed. His manifestation on Earth, of course, can be destroyed, but what the motivational force behind it is something eternal. And perhaps a very small part of it is residing inside Milton now. And you realise that all of these... There's some kind of deep history of London that goes back centuries, maybe millennia, and Igonalak is somehow tied up in all of that. Perhaps even driving all of these terrible things that have been happening recently.
We never really have properly discussed your connection to that medallion and the entity it represents, but I think it is fair to say that some of the changes that you've been through since encountering that medallion and taking possession of it have perhaps represented a deep connection with this god. And I wonder if you are, from my limited understanding of the way that this god operates, I believe it functions in our world through avatars, that it possesses or partially possesses human beings and makes them into their instruments, which you so far have largely resisted, I believe. But I just wonder whether perhaps your unique connection to this god that this woman here obviously worships might potentially give you some deeper connection to her, or something we can use to manipulate her.
Oh, are you, perhaps? I mean, beyond a rather voracious appetite, I'm not entirely sure how much, you know, to what kind of other influence I may be under.
Has the medallion ever, I don't know, presented you with impulses or ideas or any form of communication or visions?
I've seen things. I've certainly been able to perceive things through it, although I can't imagine how they would help because, well, if anything, it was just a sense of an impending... I just remember being pursued by things of... indescribable things that were just ever-changing, multi-dimensional, just a myriad of these things. I'm struggling here.
Yes, I understand some experiences do rather transcend language, but I wonder, you do see, though, what I'm trying to get at here is that this woman worships this god, this Agolonac, and to some extent, he is literally present within you. And I'm just wondering whether we can somehow take advantage of this.
Yes. Yeah, I'm struggling to see how I can manipulate his, you know, her through his influence. I mean, beyond...
I wonder how she experiences this god, whether it's through visions or manifestations, whether it is just simply pure faith on her part, but... if there was some way that you could perhaps induce a vision or religious experience with her, in her, using that amulet of yours?
Let's see. I'm not sure how I would go about this. Is it possible for me to interact with the amulet, even though if I'm non-corporeal, but it seems to be present here?
Yeah, because obviously it's resting on your incorporeal body. It seems to be both in your spatial region and also in the real world at the same time somehow. So, you know, one thing I would say is that she did sense your presence before, even though you clearly weren't visible to her. She thought, even from your brief intersection with her, that she said, "Is that you, my lord?" So you're already part of the way there, and maybe if you can figure out how to fully manifest in some way, maybe that would be the trick. But, well, you'd have to figure that out or try some things. Got any space meat left, Emery? You probably do, actually. But anyway.
Oh, God.
Whilst you're having this discussion, it actually, you haven't been paying full attention, obviously, to the conversation that Dives is having with Von Kant. But it seems like their business is concluding. And then Dives says, "Well, Miss Kant, I really thought that we could be civil about this whole thing and come to an agreement, but it seems like we are now adversaries. I bid you good night, and I assure you, powerful though your abilities may be and your insights into the darker realms, I also have equally strong tools at my disposal. My dear, we will see each other again, I am sure." And then he stands up and sort of lifts himself up through your arm, which is maybe still resting inside him. And he goes, that stake, I think it disagreed with me a bit. Well, where did you get it from? And then he just sort of turns heel and strides out the room and he leaves the door sort of half open as he walks out. And Kant just gives him a withering look as he leaves and then proceeds to... She just then picks up her glass of red wine and sips away at it with a faint smile playing across her lips. So Dives has left, and it's now the two of you, ghostly forms with Birgit von Kant in her drawing room.
How, do you propose that we try and manifest physically while von Kant is still here with us?
Perhaps, yes. I suppose with your connection to her god, that if you were to simply manifest in front of her, she might see this as some sort of divine provenance.
Well, I'd probably best get out of her seat then.
Oh, yes, that might get rather messy otherwise.
Yes, it's rather unfortunate.
Then why don't you stand...
Yeah, best not to contemplate that.
Yes. Why don't you stand in front of the young lady, and I will attempt to close the portal.
Good. Sounds like a plan.
Sounds like a terrible plan.
Yeah, the two most reckless infiltrators, whose full plan is to go in a completely invisible form into the lair of their enemies and then just appear in front of them.
Yes.
That sounds absolutely on brand for the two of you.
Well, as they're adversarial, I mean, you know, the enemy of our enemy and everything.
Oh, I suppose so. So you get up out of your shared seat and extract yourself from Birgit von Kant.
Does she feel this kind of removal of the presence?
Yes, she sort of shivers a bit as you stand up, and she sort of puts her arms around herself as if she suddenly got cold. A look of mild confusion passes over her face, and she looks over at the fireplace and it's still roaring away. And she just sort of, you know, slowly shakes her head, wondering what that was. And then she goes over to her bookshelf and starts running her finger across some of the volumes, leaving the rest of her meal uneaten on the side table.
Oh, now I'll definitely have to physically manifest.
Yeah. There's half a steak there. Yeah, it looks like she's looking for something specific. So, yeah, I guess you want to reverse the incantation. I'm not going to be mean to you, Scott, and say that it's a different spell, but I think there will be some challenge involved, because obviously, typically, you'd just be able to cast it, wouldn't you, if it was the same spell? So what I would say is, I would like to make just a regular intelligence roll to see whether you can get the order of things right.
I'll suggest to Milton, Milton, why don't you just stand in front of the young lady in such a way that it is utterly apparent that you have just appeared out of thin air? And I, on the other hand, will go over to where the portal is and attempt to reverse the incantation there. I think I understand the order in which the words will go, but I guess we'll find out.
Would it not be worth waiting to see which specific book she's looking for?
Oh, absolutely, yes. But, I mean, this is going to take me a few minutes to resolve any...
Oh, right. Okay.
So get yourself in position. As with all acts of sorcery, it is entirely unpredictable, and I think... The best thing we can do is just try to ready ourselves for whatever outcome presents itself.
Okay.
She goes over to the bookshelf and she's running a finger over. And she gets to a rather old book. To your experienced eyes, Milton, this is clearly several hundred years old, this book. Judging by the typeface on the spine, it's possibly 16th century even. I guess that's, you know, and the wear on it. And as she pulls it out, you realise it's a copy of Euclid. And it seems to be the one with the preface by John Dee, which she starts sort of looking at. And she's saying, no, where is it? She's German, of course. Where is it? I knew it was somewhere in here. And of course, Euclid, as you know, is a book on mathematics and geometry, which... You could make an intelligence roll if you want, or an education roll at this point, either an idea roll or a...
Let's go for education, shall we?
Yeah. Unfortunately not. I don't think there's a reasonable way that you could push the roll in your current state. You could spend luck on it if you want, but it's up to you.
Well, no, let's see where sheer ignorance gets us.
Okay, that seems to be the par for the course.
It's got us this far.
Okay, and then she goes back to her seat and sits down, and then she starts sort of muttering to herself in German, actually, now. Clearly she wouldn't speak to herself in English with a German accent when she's on her own. I don't imagine either of you have German language on your character sheets, but I would say German is a well enough known language to allow some degree of understanding of if you're smart enough. So you can... Both. I'll allow you, maybe not Emery because you're busy,
yep.
But Milton, if you can make a hard education roll, I'll allow you to understand some of what she's saying.
Right, okay. Oh, no, No, it's not hard, is it?
It's not hard. I don't know whether that would be the eight luck. Yes, it would be eight luck if you wanted to, but again...
I might go for that. Yeah, I might go for that. Eight luck.
Okay, so...
I've got 30 luck, so...
You're only maybe picking up the general sense of it, but it seems like she's saying that something like there's a way of getting to Dives' matters, his things. I guess his books, probably, his other papers. And then a word that you do know is a reference to architect. And it could be architecture, or it could be architect, or architects, but you don't know the precise meaning of it. So, but that's more or less what you pick up. And there's some relationship between this Euclid book, the geometry book, and getting to Dives.
Okay.
But anyway, at this point, Emery, your spell goes off, as it were.
Yes.
You close the portal.
It'll be fine.
It'll be absolutely fine. Do you want to describe exactly what it's like to close a portal to another dimension? I'd be curious to see it through Emery's eyes. You're still drunk, aren't you, both of you? So that's...
Oh, absolutely, yes. We've entered the spirit realm in more than one respect. So I think because we sort of traced the portal, the outline of the portal outside, opening it up that way, closing it again is very much just reversing the process, saying the right words and visualizing the right things, and then just tracing back the portal we've created in the world back to the alleyway, and just undoing it, unmaking it.
Yes, absolutely. And it is this sort of, even though it's dark, clearly on the alleyway, the portal itself is like a rectangle of light. And as it closes, the rectangle gets narrower and narrower until it just goes to a line. And then there's this popping sound and it just winks out of existence. And at that precise moment, you suddenly feel whole again. Both you and Milton are now flesh. Flesh and bone.
I think at that point, between the disorientation and all the gin, Emery lurches over and vomits in a plant pot in the corner.
Fantastic. Emery's not done that in many an episode. There was an early episode where he vomited spectacular. Oh, it was the Surrey Enigma, of course, when he vomited all over...
off the castle wall, yeah.
Yes. No, and again when Sir Hector was mauled, there was another vomiting. Fantastic. But this time you find perhaps a more appropriate receptacle than your friend's front shirt front. And the splatter of the vomit hitting the bucket or the fire grate or wherever it was. The splatter of the vomit hitting the plant pot kind of brings Birgit out of her reverie. She's been very engrossed in this book. And her head snaps up and she sees you in front of her, Milton, standing there imposingly, or as imposingly as Milton ever does stand. He's got quite a girth on him, of course. And she looks up and she's just speechless for a minute. Her jaw just hangs open and her eyes are like staring at you. What do you do, Milton?
Hello there.
Very polite.
I think Emery wipes the vomit off his mouth at the back of his hand. So show her the medallion, old man. Show her the medallion.
Oh, yeah, yes, yes.
And she kind of just goes back in a chair and suddenly realises there are two intruders in her room. And she's found her voice again and she says, "What is the meaning of this? Who are you? How did you get into my chambers?"
"Please, please do not be alarmed." And I pull out the medallion and hold it up in front of her. I'm obviously still around my neck. And at the same time, I indicate to the half a steak that's left and say, "Do you mind if I clear up here?"
And she looks up and you're holding the medallion out in front of you. So it's kind of like she's looking through the aperture at you as if it were a lens. And her face goes white. All the blood just drains out of her face. And she just... kind of lurches forward and just drops down to her knees and bows her head. And she's saying, "Oh, my lord, I am so sorry.
I did not realize it was you. Oh, why have you appeared to me in this way? I hope you are not displeased with me. I am doing my best. I assure you, I will get the book. I will get the book. We will open up the pathways again. Are you here to take my soul, to destroy me? Why are you here?
That won't be necessary. Look, I've got a bit of stake here that'll keep me busy for a little while. Look, please, get back in your seat.
She says, oh, you wish to eat. Of course you wish to eat. You must be so hungry after all these years. Oh.
But it does feel like that.
We have been searching for you, my lord. Oh, please, it would be a great honour if you let me feed you.
Oh, well. Well, go on then. Please, don't let me stop you.
And she looks at you and she says, but your form, my master, your form is not... I see that your the body that you have incorporated here is not... you do not have the required orifices, master. How shall I feed you?
Look, I'm having to make do with what I've got here, okay? Just, I've got to do stuff around town, you see, and I can't be appearing, you know, with all my orifices on display. So I'll just take the food in the conventional manner, you know, and then you can tell me more about where we are with this book.
Of course. Far be it from me to question the workings of a greater mind than myself. Here, let me at least cut it up for you. Please, you do not like... you like the raw bit. I will get the raw bit for you, master.
And she just kind of sits back down and starts cutting up the steak into bite-sized pieces. And then very nervously, she stands up with the plate and gets the fork, and she just stabs a piece of raw, dripping, bloody steak, and just... At first, she's a bit kind of... She's wondering if maybe one of your mouths is going to pop open on your hand, and then realises that perhaps this isn't going to happen tonight, and just kind of just offers it to you and waits for you to accept the offering.
Thank you very much. And, I'll just bite it off the fork. And very nice indeed. So, yes, where are we?
And like a proud mother of a young baby taking its first bites, she has this broad grin on her face as she's feeding you more and more of this steak, piece by piece. And she says,
of course, the book. Is it to your liking? It is the best beef I could find. It is a sacrament.
It's very nice indeed. Maybe a little overcooked, but you know, it's perfectly...
I will fire the chef immediately. I will fire them immediately. We will get a new one in to take their place. I realized I am not keeping the standards that you require, my lord. But before we continue, though, your strange friend in the plot plant who has left his stomach contents in the pot plant.
He doesn't quite have the constitution that I have. And as I say, we've had business around town, and I can't be expected to do everything for myself.
Is he also a great old one?
He's certainly old, and he's pretty good too.
I know it's not canon. I know he's gone like isn't a great old one, but anyway, for the... Perhaps he's just inflating his worth in her mind.
And she says, of course, the book. Well, you see, there seem to be many competing interests in it.
Yes.
I think we have eliminated one threat, this rather aggressive Irish lady. One of my summonings dealt with her earlier today. She will not be bothering us again.
That was your work, was it?
Yeah.
Sorry to say that she was actually working for me.
No. Entschuldigung, no. I do not mean to question you, but my agents seem to imply that she was working for Dives. No?
I will say her methods are somewhat unconventional, but she does have a roundabout way of doing things, but she's proved very useful in the past. It's unfortunate that she's been taken out of action.
Well, I apologize deeply for causing if I caused any trouble in this matter. But, well, then of course there is De Castries, this Arriviste, he has been causing a great deal of trouble as well. He came very close to destroying the volume when he sent the apparition to the home of Bowers.
Ah, that was De Castries, was it? Very, very interesting.
Indeed it was. He seems very reckless. He will do anything to get hold of this volume, you see. Me, I would not dream of harming these important pages. I know how important they are to you to bring you fully back into this world.
Good, good, good. Well, have you got any more of this steak?
Of course. How stupid of me to think that merely half a steak would be enough for you. I will go immediately to the kitchen. Please make yourself comfortable. If your friend needs to lie down and take the vapor, smelling salts or maybe some cocaine or something to counteract the effects.
Perhaps a little gin or something might help him out.
Are you sure? He looks very green.
Well, you know, hair of the dog and all that.
Yes, a little gin will put me in just the right frame of mind again.
Very well. I will return presently. And then she gets up and sort of backs out the room, looking at you and almost like bowing and like backing up out of the room. And she says, one moment, bitte. And then she goes downstairs.
Right, what are we going to do?
I must admit, old chap, I hadn't quite thought that far ahead. This has already gone much better than I was expecting, and I suppose we should capitalise upon the situation. You suppose she does seem to be rather efficient at hurting people, judging by what she appears to have done to poor Rita. Do you suppose that we might be able to convince her to redirect those energies to people we don't like, as opposed to, say, our friends and acquaintances?
Yes, good thinking.
Such as perhaps this De Castries?
Yes. So, yeah, now, please, I could really do with some pointers here, Emery. I'm completely off-piste and I'm out of my element. And so if you could just, so De Castries, I'm making quick notes while you were... Anybody else?
Well, obviously Dives.
Yes, Dives, yeah.
I think as long as we keep all these other individuals fighting amongst themselves and busy that way, then we are left to perhaps deal with Boas directly. And if there's less competition for the book, then we are perhaps not only more guaranteed of being able to procure it ourselves, but maybe even for a better price.
Right. So if we convince this Von Kant lady to engage herself in dealing with the other individuals involved, thus paving the way, clearing the way to Bowers for ourselves.
Perhaps then you, as an avatar, or at least a representative of her deity, might present this to her as some sort of religious duty, a holy war, perhaps, to be waged on your behalf.
Really? Right, okay.
Smite the unbelievers and all that stuff, yes.
Yes, indeed.
Well, I suppose once we have dealt with the situation here, we'd better find out what's happened to young Rita as well and see whether she needs assistance.
Yes, indeed. We need to find out what's happened. Yes, so as soon as she gets back with this steak, we can get on with things. Where on earth is she? I mean, she'd only have to, I want it blue.
And right on cue, you hear the creaking of the staircase and Birgit reappears with a trencherman's platter piled high with steaks. And she looks over to you as she comes in and she says, I, of course, did not take the liberty of garnishing them at all with the kartoffel or the kohl. I assume...
As they are.
And then she just puts it down in front of you and then she goes and stands obsequiously by the bookshelf and just watches you with a big grin on her face. Eat up. I want to see the meat juices dripping down your chin, master.
Okay. Well, I start tucking in and then I will, while I'm eating, I'm going to start talking about what I want her to do.
Has this turned into an eldritch mukbang?
An eldritch what?
Mukbang.
I don't want to ask.
It's an internet phenomenon whereby people pay, I think particularly young women, to eat huge amounts of food on camera.
Oh, right. Right, so yeah, I'm gonna be tucking in and in between mouthfuls, or you know, even during mouthfuls.
Of course.
I'm going to... Yeah, so I'm thinking what we need to do is take care of these other individuals who are, frankly, just getting in the way.
Yeah. Very good.
Yes. So if you could focus your attentions on these people, I will take care of Dives. At least I will get my right-hand man here. We will take care of that. And if you could, turn your attentions to the Castries and Dives and all these other annoying individuals.
Of course, my lord. This is understood. I was working under the impression, though, that it was important not to create too much of a fuss, though.
Too much of a fuss? I'd bang my fist on the table and say, this is a holy war we're dealing with here.
I verstehe. But the impression that you sent, the visions that you sent were to remain in the shadows. Are you saying now that we come out fully into the light and bring our forces to bear on all our enemies that surround us? Is that...
I want you to act surreptitiously, of course. But I just want to, you know, convey how important this is, that these people are dealt with. Okay, now I trust you to do this in surreptitiously as possible. Can I put my faith in you?
Naturally, Master. You can have put your entire faith in me. I will do everything that you ask. But the thing is, as I am sure you are aware, the others, maybe the Casti, I do not know yet who, there is another powerful entity in play, Master. That is why we must be cautious, no?
Well, look, I understand this, but...
Far be for me to imply.
Are you doubting your lord's power and presence in this world now that he has manifested physically?
No, not for one minute. No, I am not doubting that, of course. In normal circumstances, you would be, you would slaughter all before in a great fountains of blood and viscera and all these lovely things. But you are, as we all know, sir, master, you are not yourself right now. You're as you show.
What?
You're not quite yourself. Something was taken from you many years ago. You told me this yourself, or at least in some way. And we need to restore you to your full potency, sir, before anything could...
Are you questioning my potency? I'm trying to eat steak here, and I have to deal with this? You are... Well, I'm beginning to question my choice of, you know...
Oh, Peter, no. You have made the right choice. We are enslaved to your will. Of course, we will do this. All I am trying to avoid is any unnecessary problems that might emerge. It might be Dives, it might be the Castries, maybe even another. I don't know. I get the sense that there may be others circling around, sniffing around for this power, you see. But, yes, the...
When the time comes, you will know what is necessary. Do you understand?
I will do that. I have no care for my own safety or my own future, only that you will manifest fully and bring a great orgy of consumption back to the city.
Great. Well, we'll hear no more about it. Now, if you won't mind, I would like to get on with my meal. Thank you.
I will do this. We will prepare to bring the toad creatures back into play. And the Castries first, and then Dives.
Yeah, whatever it takes.
And she sort of bows down and says, I will now leave you to your meat. And leaves.
Right.
And closes the door behind her to give you your privacy.
Okay. Well, what do you think, Emery?
I believe we have either simplified the situation or greatly complicated it. I'm not entirely sure which.
Well, how do you propose we get out of here now? I'm going to start taking bits of steak and putting them in my pocket.
Via the front door, I believe.
Yes, yes.
Yes, I suggest we just walk out of here.
Okay, okay. Do you see any books you want to grab on the way? It's quite a library we've got here.
Yes, I mean, that volume of Euclid that she was looking at earlier, I may just pocket that before we leave. A little tithe for her god.
Good, good.
Of course. And no doubt she would not question any kind of removal of her objects. That's purely expected, that there has to be a sacrifice of some kind. So, okay, yeah, so you've pocketed the Euclid with the John Dee preface. Milton's pockets are full of steak, and the grease is like slowly seeping out of the bottom of the pockets and running down the inside of his jacket, which, you're going to have this constant... You're going to be followed around by dogs now for the rest of...
Oh, God, yes.
Okay, yeah, so what, you're just going to walk out the front door, yeah?
Don't see why not.
Yeah, why not?
Fantastic.
I think we have sown all the seeds of chaos, and...
You've done enough.
Now it's time to let them bloom.
Absolutely. You shall reap what you sow, as it were.
And I suppose the next thing, then, is to try to find out what's happened to Rita.
Yeah.
I think it is. And as you come down the stairs, your weighty steps making the creaking heavier than it is, you see that Von Kant has sort of lined up her retinue, her servants or employees or just the members of her organization. There's probably about half a dozen of them, and they're just lined up at the bottom of the staircase, and they're all looking up at you with these beatific and awed expressions, except for one who's kind of like squinting a bit and kind of just slowly, sort of very slowly shaking his head. And as you go past, you hear him mutter, "That ain't no god."
"I beg your pardon?"
And he just kind of shrinks back and says, nothing.
"Now get back to work, you lot."
And they all scurry off to their tasks as you exit the house of Birgit von Kant and out onto the streets of Islington.
God, blimey, Emery, I don't know what come over me.
It's hard to be a god. Fantastic. And I think we will end the short session there, because we now need Rita back. Okay. But that went about as... I don't know whether that went as well as could be expected or as badly as could expect it, but it certainly did it.
Well, something happened. Yeah.
I think everyone won, except for the potted plant. Actually, even then it got fertilised.
That is true. Well, I'm not sure vomit is the best fertilizer in the world, but yeah. Maybe there's some nutrients in there. Anyway, that was a fun little interlude. I've no idea what the consequences are going to be. I don't think you do either, but I'm sure it'll be fun.
Oh, God, no.
No idea.
There is no situation involving lots of factions that cannot be improved by stirring the shit.
Exactly. Although the fact that you're sort of allied now with Birgit von Kant in some way, maybe Rita won't be entirely happy about that. But I guess we'll see. Given that Birgit sent this horrific monster to eviscerate her, but I guess you can figure that all out.
We all make mistakes.
Better, here comes the rain. Let it better, don't mind the rain. He'll mend your umbrella, then go on his way, singing toodaloomalooma toodalay, toodaloomalooma.
It's thank you time again, and as usual, I wanted to thank all of our backers at all levels. We can't do the show without you. Well, we could, but it wouldn't be anywhere near as good, because with your support and help, we can do all of the extra things that we want to do. I also want to thank all the players, who I realised I haven't really been thanking in our thanks section. So thank you to all the players. I love you all dearly, and I hope that we can continue doing Grizzly Peaks far, far into the future, until we're old and grey and can't remember what happened in the last session. Actually, I think that kind of applies to me already, but for the rest of you, you'll get there soon, don't worry. And if you do like our show, which I assume you are if you've listened all the way to the end, then do come and join the fun at patreon.com/grizzlypeaks. Look forward to seeing you there.
And the umbrellas to mend today.